Today on the Inland Journal podcast, Spokane Mayor David Condon. Every couple of months, we get the privilege of talking with him, and this time, with the candidate filing week beginning today, Monday, and the mayor about 7 months from leaving office due to term limits, we thought we'd ask him about the upcoming campaign. In general terms, what will he be looking for in the candidates for mayor, council president, and city council? What are the issues he considers most important? And how does he hope the transition to a new mayor will go? Join us now for a discussion with Spokane Mayor David Condon. So, Mayor, as we move into the summer campaign season, I'm not going to ask you about specific candidates, but I want to ask you about what do you think are the right qualifications and characteristics for candidates who are running for mayor, for council president, for city council?
You know, I think it's a balance of first and foremost, somebody that is willing to have a conversation and communicate with the public. Much of the job of an elected official, specifically mayor or the city council president, is a communications job. And not communication as in a one-way communication, but actually very engaging. And we changed here at the city quite extensively our communications practices. And there's been some reporting on this, and that is where we have a lot of communication managers, which used to be public information officers, which was really a one-way conversation. It was you put the information out, and if it stuck, it stuck. If it didn't, it didn't. Now we systematically went through and changed them to communication managers of how do you manage the communication on the different platforms. So I think this is in part and parcel for our elected officials that they need to be folks that want to engage. And so as we look for candidates, who are those that have a demonstration of that sort of engagement in their background? The second piece is those that are focused on the operation of the city. The city is a billion-dollar operation. We have both the utility side of the house, water, sewer, garbage, and we also have the city side of the house, police, fire, streets, parks, libraries, and really looks at how do we operate that city. Of course, now a couple years into our strategic plan, One Spokane, and of course we focus in being the safest city of our size, being a healthy community, being a smarter community. We have many projects, programs, and initiatives in those areas. And so I'll really be looking to those that want to further those initiatives and that strategic plan. If there's a benefit of having a two-term mayor, it has been the ability to put into place a strategic plan. Now, as we have a transition in many of these positions, I'm going to be really looking to those that are committed to continuing to fulfill the strategic plan, and then, of course, bringing new things onto it. But that strategic plan was built on a considerable amount of citizen engagement continually, but then also a strategic vision for this community that I believe we haven't seen in several decades, and I think the public is responding to that.
So how do you ensure that the transition goes from the way you've carried things off to the next administration? What's the best way that you can encourage that to happen?
Well, I think the key is to have a very deliberate plan, and that's if folks check out One Spokane, it's right there on our website. I talk about it a lot. We report on it on a monthly basis with the city council. We've already done a little bit of transition as it is. We've had a new councilwoman, Kate Burke, that came on after, and she replaced actually Councilwoman Amber Waldriff, who was a leader in developing the One Spokane plan. And so you need to bring people into speed and show them and also commit ourselves to that. And when you do something that is strategic, it is strategic for a reason. It's not easy. There's controversy. There's debate. There's sure we agree to the outcomes, and we have agreed to performance measures of the outcomes, whether it be increased median household income, increased property values, increase our credit rating, be the safest city of our size. You know, we agree on all that. How you get there is where the debate is, and that's what's exciting, and especially when you talk about things that are really transformative, because it's a case of doing things differently than we have today, because we aren't getting the outcomes we want. And when you do that, there's significant stakeholders that are vested in the current system, and it's challenging for all of us. And we also have to be prepared that some of the innovations we do are not going to work out. And too often, often government, and especially politicians, are worried about failure. and should be. I don't think we should embrace failure, but on the flip side, we also should not be scared of it, that it causes us not to try things out. You know, I'm invited all over the country to speak about some of our innovations, and often it's about the innovations that have been successful and have made national attention. But I also speak about, I was just in New York last week at NYU, at their School of Public Policy with seven other mayors. And I was talking about smart city technologies in particular, but what are the things that we're willing to try out? So as I look to both as who I'll be supporting in these elections coming up, and also during the transition, my administration is committed to that transition, even to the point where, you know, we really take a hard look now of whether we're going to refill some of our cabinet and senior positions, because we want to give the ability of that next mayor to have the ability to. Of course, you know, everybody serves at the pleasure of the mayor, but also that they have some spots where they can bring folks in to further these initiatives. But you do that with a very solid plan. And of course, any administration, any elected official will put their mark on it and be responsive to the electorate, and they should be. That's how our system works. But there also needs to be a core function of what that plan is.
So what about qualifications? When you look at somebody's background, what are the things you're looking for to say, yeah, I think this person could be a good elected official versus this person is way over his or her head?
You know, I think a key one, I touched on it early on, which is somebody's, commitment to engagement. Well, then when you look at qualifications, it would be then how have they been involved? What has been, what have they done? Have they been parts of nonprofit boards? Have they been engaged in a community initiative? Have they engaged with their own family or in their business associations? You know, have they not only worried about their own business, but also worried about, the association of their businesses? And so what has been their community involvement, their professional involvement? And it gives them a qualification, although maybe not directly related to city business. But if someone's involved in their state or national association, they start getting a perspective of how do you bring together a disparate group of individuals that might have common goals, but how you get there is different. So they've gone through that, and they worry, they work through those issues. And similarly, you get part of an elected team that everybody is separately elected, kind of like business folks are, they need to worry about their own ownership, but come together for a common good and debate how you get there, but ultimately want to build, that city that's safer, smarter, and healthier. And how do you do that?
So then what are the qualifications that you're wary of, that you're skeptical about?
You know, often I worry about, especially at the local level. I served at the federal level on the senior staff in our congresswoman's office, and have been involved in state policy. I worry about those that have a passion for certain issues that are at the state and federal level, and don't seemingly seem to be passionate about the local issues. And I've spent a lot of effort trying to focus our administration on local issues. Definitely there are interactions at the federal level and state level. We just recently were at a bill signing with the governor, but it was hyper-local. It was about looking at property crimes, and there was an issue at the state level that we wanted to address. It took us 3 years, but it was clearly a local impact. And now what's exciting is the city of Spokane is leading the state. This will be a state-level law, and we learned that it had to be because initially we just wanted it for Spokane, and it did not get across the finish line and onto the governor's desk. We made it statewide, and it got onto the governor's desk. But we led that. But it was from a place of we led it because of the local impact. And so often as I talk to those that are aspiring to go for elected office, I see that their passions are really at those issues that are at the federal or state level. And if that's the case, they should run for state elected office, whether it be the 3rd, 4th, 7th, 9th, legislative districts, and take on those issues. And so I think that's a key issue. And then also, although somebody may come because they're passionate about an issue, I often wonder, often those issues are you know, maybe 10% of the work they're doing and 90% of it. And if they're really put off by the other work, they'll have a difficult time in the office. And so I'm not suggesting that people shouldn't have the issues that really compel them into the public sphere, but they also need to realize often, not always, but often that interest is but a small portion of the total portfolio of what it is to be in elected office at the local level.
So what is it in your background? You work for Kathy McMorris Rodgers, as you talked about, you've been in the military. What in your background best prepared you to be a good mayor?
You know, there's kind of three buckets. You named two of them. I had a background in government, albeit at the federal level, although I was the district director and very familiar with many of the local issues as they intertwined into federal policy. Secondly, my time in the military gave me a unique ability as one of the youngest mayors of the city of Spokane, where I commanded often in units where many people were much more senior to me. I commanded in the medical area in the Army where, you know, my doctors and nurses outranked me, but I ran, you know, the operation of the hospital. And it's an interesting, you know, so for the workforce at city government, there's very brilliant people that are technically very much more capable, whether it be our engineers or we run, you know, the waste energy plant or the wastewater treatment plant or our water systems. I mean, these are highly technical, highly qualified people. And so how do you lead a workforce knowing that you're not the smartest person in the room and you don't know how to do those people's jobs, but how do you support them? How do you make sure they have the resources that they need? And then the third bucket is I grew up in a family that started, and many of my siblings have their own companies. I started my first company when I was a sophomore in college. At a coffee cart in downtown Boston. And so as I went to school, was part of Army ROTC, I also would wake up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and sell coffee and then race back to school. And by the time I left college, we had 4 of those locations. My brother joined me in that effort. And so then that really puts my hat on of, you know, government serves at the pleasure of the taxpayer. And it's often very difficult. I run a large workforce, especially being a strong mayor, but I actually work for the citizens. And at times there's a conflict. I said earlier my experience of being in the military has helped me manage and get people the resources, but sometimes I have to tell people no, that we will not have the resources because my citizens make $48,000 for a family of 4. So every $100 I take from a citizen is a real $100, especially if that $100 is every month. And still for my city, for our city, it costs that family $55,000 to live paycheck to paycheck, and the average income is only $48,000. So we have not closed that gap yet, and that's what brings us back to one of the reasons I was elected, and that was water rates. We had increased water rates 16% on a family or an elderly couple that are on a fixed income. That was several hundred dollars and maybe a couple hundred a month, especially over the summer months if you were watering your lawn or if you had a garden. And that was the number one reason why I was elected. I disagreed with it policy-wise, of the way you get to environmental solutions through coercion, through pricing. And I also disagreed with it on the effect of what it was on our families. And that's where you've seen in our administration, and quite frankly, one of the things I speak on nationally of where we are in the green initiatives, but at the same time, not being overburdensome on our citizens. We were highlighted in Governing Magazine, which is a national magazine, on this very subject. And we continue need to lead in innovation and in the green economy, but at the same time, not on the backs of those folks that are trying just to make ends meet.
We're talking with Spokane Mayor David Condon about the upcoming campaign for Spokane City offices, about his accomplishments and other things.
So you made reference to the strong mayor system. Yeah. Do you believe the strong mayor system has been better than the system Spokane had before, where you had 7 council members and one of them was a mayor?
Yes, and used and the tools afforded a strong mayor, used correctly, absolutely. And so there's a balance, right? I think as you look at it, one nice thing for the stability of a city manager, perhaps more long-range visioning, putting things into place, Although, without being overtly critical, where were we when that was in the case? What was our strategy versus what you see now with our strategic plan and One Spokane and what we're able to do with that and the leadership that is coming out of City Hall, whether it be my administration or otherwise? The separate piece of that, though, and that's where I mentioned it and I touched on it, is a mayor using the tools of a strong mayor. There are, you know, probably 40 to 50 key positions that serve at the pleasure of the mayor. And if utilized correctly, you can bring in a team that will work 18 hours a day, look at issues differently, work with the professional staff, the career staff, in a way that is managed well, that you use and leverage the knowledge they bring to the table, but maybe with an outsider's perspective and with a citizen focus. And so that's what you saw very early on in my administration as I appointed Rick Romero as the head of our public works. We took something that this city was going to grapple with that often the public did not know we were even doing, and they're about to spend $500 million at the time, and with a different set of eyes, but with some of the same professional staff, took something that was going to be $500 million, made it $350 million, and now is leading the country. I mean, I never thought I was going to be the sewer mayor, but it's the thing I get questioned on the most. And quite frankly, brought people to the table that had been on the opposite sides of the fence, whether it be on the environmental issues, whether it be on the political issues, well, you know, you name it, and brought us together on a focus, which is we want the cleanest river we can possibly have. And here at this fall, as I leave office, we'll be just closing that out, leading the country, largest city in the country, complying with the Clean Water Act, not under a court order. You saw the same innovations as we brought in new leadership in our police department, all-time lows of trust and confidence in our police department, now to all-time highs. And that wasn't without very innovative. You know, we're the largest police department in the state that has body-worn cameras. We're figuring out how to implement that, whether it be privacy issues. I mean, we have state laws, federal laws, not to mention cultural issues. And now, as you talk to our police officers, you couldn't get them to go out on the street without the body camera. And at the same time, you know, what does that mean? What are the implications? And so that's what, as you really look at it, we were able to do that because the strong mayor form of government, bringing in a team that was committed to some key strategies and tirelessly working those. And I think that using those tools but at the same time realizing that how do you set the groundwork so that you can have multi-year strategies, and that's where you see One Spokane and making sure that we have that strategy. So you have to make up for some of the weaknesses, but by the benefit of being a strong mayor, you can carry out a strategy with the right team, leveraging the professional staff, the career staff at the same time.
So do you worry that as you transition to another mayor that a lot of those things, and you've talked about this already, that a lot of those initiatives that you've been working on are going to be blunted or stopped or anything like that?
You know, the community needs to be ready for that, especially if there's some that seemingly were not aligned with where the voting public is, and I can appreciate that. That being said, the engagement we've had with the strategic plan has been pretty dramatic. And so I think as the community continues to engage on the strategic plan, the One Spokane plan, they will demand that out of their elected officials. Perhaps the methodology to get to an outcome may change based on the individual, and that's great. It should be allowed, and will happen. But that being said, the outcome still, you want to make sure that people are focused on being the safest, you know, city of our size. So what does that mean? How do you implement, you know, innovations in police and fire and what, you know, and what we're doing? The mayor will come into a whole different technological capability where we have real-time performance measures in every one of our departments and divisions, and how you tweak those dials to have better outcomes was not something that I had the benefit of, and some of it's technology, and others is I believe the focus my administration has had on making sure that we knew what the real-time, you know, information was about our system, whether it be our 311 customer service. When we came on board, you were given a brochure in your utility bill roughly in February that had 85 different different phone numbers on it. Now you dial 311, I know instantaneously what's the call volume coming in, who, what are people calling about, what are their needs, are we meeting their needs, are we answering the phone within 90 seconds. You know, we had no visibility of this previously. And here shortly by August, our citizens will have a personalized application on their phone where they can sign up for tee times, pay their parking ticket, pay their utility bill. And, you know, for the beginning of time, that's all been desperate, different operations for, and people had to have multiple signups and everything else. Even this summer, it's going to be exciting. We'll have kids with a My Spokane card that allow them to get onto the bus, go to the library, go to the splash, or go to the swimming pools, all on a single card. And we're piloting it to ultimately be a single card for citizens, that citizens will have the My Spokane card, and it'll be activated for the library, it'll be activated for the STA, it'll be activated for the Parks Department, and you'll be able to do all those things throughout our city on a single account. So it'll be pretty cool to see.
So you've had a chance to talk about accomplishments over 8 years, and then you were talking about New York and you know, just trying different things. Are there one or two things that you wish that we hadn't have done as an administration?
You know, as you look at it, individual items, and we've learned from some of this. So I would say, as we work on some of these innovations, the engagement along the way, as a learning organization, you're going to pilot certain things that don't come out the right way, and what those are, and how we do them, I think. But we've learned from those. Well, you know, the case in point is we launched our linked initiative, and that's where we link all the construction on our roads at once. The public has had to live through this. We've learned our lessons. You know, we had complete closures up on South Lincoln around Huckleberry's and Rosar's, in the impacts on the traveling, impacts on small business. We went down into the same Lincoln, but down in the middle of the city, and kept along, you know, where the Martin Wolfson Theater is and in the Spokesman Building and other areas, and we did a single lane of traffic. We thought that would be better. Well, that didn't really work out. Then we went over to East Sprague. We did a rolling closure, and we saw some benefits in that sort of model. And then as we went to North Monroe, first time in city history, we used two different contractors. We got it done in a single construction season. And not only that, but I believe 45, 47 days early. But there literally is a seam in the road there, you know, and it was added expense to the taxpayer, meaning having two contractors is more expensive than one. It's not double, but it is more expensive. But the impact on the community was dramatically lower. And so, sure, I wish I would have done that on the first one. And I took a lot of heat from as we did those previous projects. And that's where I think you really do have an example of career staff who know how to do things, and perhaps, but at the same time, bringing in senior executives, government executives, to look at things a different way, and bring those solutions and work together with the career staff. But yeah, I wish that that first year we would have done it like we did North Monroe, but and you know, and being more, and we've changed a lot of policy through the way. And so, you know, last year during construction, a lot less phone calls into the mayor's office than we had received. You know, still we get some. I'm not saying they went away, but dramatically lower. And so I think, and that really speaks to the engagement piece. And I think this community, as we look going forward, as part of One Spokane, our capital plan is just hovering around $1 billion over the next 6 years. That's significant, and people are going to feel the construction. I think we're at a tipping point during the summer months of how much construction can a community handle, just in aggravation, in lost sales for our small businesses. We don't want to shut down small businesses by any means. So I think we're at a critical spot. Then not only that, as we get to a certain level, we're competing against ourselves. And so sometimes there's so much work that it's more work than what our construction companies can handle. And so then we're attracting companies from out of region, which if we need to get done, that's fine. But I'd rather do it in a way that, you know, that money, it's our taxpayer dollars. Let's keep that taxpayer money here. I still want our contractors to bid competitively, don't get me wrong. But I think we're at a sweet spot right now to where we can continue. But if we add much more, you know, the labor market is very tight here. And so the cost would go up, and those dollars would go out of region.
So let's finish with this. What are, as we head into the summer and fall campaign seasons, what are the top 3 to 5 issues that you think are the most important that people should be asking about in the city of Spokane?
So to align it with kind of our strategic plan, I would say first and foremost is in the area of safety and health, and that is philosophically, how do we address homelessness? I think is a key issue, and you see a divergent path even between my administration and the city council. We really do believe in that you do not solve homelessness through lawlessness, that those small percentage of people that are experiencing homelessness that are addressing vagrancy and lawlessness, we need to deal with very forcefully and make sure people feel safe. We want to be the safest community of our size, and we need to address that. Separately from that, addressing homelessness in a very targeted way and being people focused, partnering with our partners and making sure that happens. I think that's going to be a top issue. I think the next issue is still going to be public safety as we implement yes, this change in state law, and how do we focus on property crime, and how do we address that in a way that's results-based and making sure we do that. And then continually to look at job creation. And if you want folks to live here, I think that's going to be your third major issue. And continuing to focus in the targeted areas, continuing to focus in ways that does not make government burdensome. You know, we totally revamped the way we work with businesses. And as a city, I think people are being attracted to the region, no doubt. I spend a lot of time in Seattle. Next week I'll spend in Denver recruiting companies to Spokane. And what we want to make sure, though, is they locate inside the city limits. And we need to be very wary of looking at policies and ordinances that make people not want to locate inside the city limits. And that would be a shame. I think we need to have a strong core. I think our region is fabulous, and in my colleagues in Liberty Lake and Spokane Valley and Deer Park and other areas are very competitive. But we don't want to make Spokane, the city of Spokane, not competitive. And so I'd ask people to seriously look at our candidates and those running for election and what their thoughts are on certain ordinances and what the impact is on job creators, because we need those jobs in the city, and we need those people to live in the city. And so it really, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, and as they tout people are coming to the city, challenge them on, are they coming to Spokane, the greater Spokane area, or are they coming to the city of Spokane? And when you talk to those that are coming, or even people that live here, you know, the fact of the matter is the median household income is greater outside the city limits. We've had a huge impact on going from around 42,000 now around 49,000. So that's great, and that's intrinsic growth. Our citizens are, you know, this is not importing. This is our citizens making more money, and that is awesome. But let's make sure where you see in our first ring suburbs, theirs is growing faster than ours. And why is that? And is that a matter of policy? And if it is a matter of policy, and I would suggest it is, what are the proposals out there that might be negatively impacting that? And so we need to make sure that as we look to future leadership, that they are looking to the impacts of those. So first and foremost, I think you'll see homelessness and vagrancy at the top of the issues, and philosophically you see a big divide, and this community has an opportunity to voice where they think we should go on that. Secondly, especially in public safety and law enforcement, where we go there, how we support our law enforcement officers, and then thirdly is the impact on job creation and where it happens very tactically, meaning where are the jobs being created. We want those jobs to be created in our city, and we also want to make sure that people want to live in our city. And so I think those are the top three major issues as I look at it.
David Condon is in the final year of his time as mayor of the city of Spokane. We'll talk with him again in a couple of months. Thanks for joining us for this Inland Journal podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast by searching for Inland Journal in iTunes, NPR One, or Google Play, or find it on the Inland Journal page at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Tell us what you think of the program. Send your comments to inlandjournal@kpbx.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Doug Nadvornik.